Goedemorgen en hartelijk welkom bij deze fantastische uitzending van Hour of Power. Het wordt een feestelijk programma, onder andere door de aanwezigheid van een vriendin van Dr. Phil, de bekende psycholoog uit Amerika die geweldige adviezen heeft. En dan Nina Withaker, wat kan zij fantastisch zingen. En ook het kinderkoor zingt. En als we het over zingen hebben, dan hebben we het over Henny Huisman. Want muziek is jouw leven, toch Henny?
Dat klopt.
Voor een deel.
Ja,
dat is
zeker.
Meer, hè?
Dat is meer. Dat is absoluut meer, ja.
Okay.
Ja.
Maar daar wil je straks over praten.
Ja, absoluut.
Ik zie er naar uit.
Okay.
Wij gaan snel naar de Christelijke Kathedraal om te luisteren naar een schitterend stuk muziek.
From the Crystal Cathedral in Garden Grove, California, join Robert Schuller in An Hour of Power, now celebrating our 35th year as the face and voice of positive Christianity to the world.
What a great place to be on a Sunday morning. Fantastic. Turn around. Shake hands with somebody behind you. Give them the blessing. God loves you, and so do I. This is a wow day as we welcome back author, speaker, dear friend Bruce Wilkinson, returning from Africa. Wave at them so they... And we welcome author, lecturer, life coach Libby Gill, who's talking about her new book, Traveling Hopefully. That's what we've been trying to do for 50 years, Traveling Hopefully. And recording artist, beautiful Nita Whitaker, returns to us. And our own Crystal Cathedral Academy Children's Choir, under the direction of Carol Aspley, they join the Crystal Cathedral Choir with an exciting Nigerian folk song. Also, we have Sean Groombridge at Hazel Wright Organ, Mark Riley with our orchestra.
Hello, good. Hi.
Ah, I'm not used to you being in the choir loft. You all... This place is changing a little. As you may notice, we are getting stuff hanging from the ceiling. Somebody said, I'm losing my cathedral. First of all, it's not your cathedral. And it's not mine. It's God's. And we want to use it to win people. And the creation is going to be held this summer. Now, this has never been done before. We're making history like we did when we built a crystal cathedral. They said it couldn't be done. Come here to Garden Grove and we'll show you. Well, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And all God's people said, wow. Okay, the hymn, All Hail the Power of Jesus' Name. Let's sing it.
Thank you.
You may be seated. People who come to church week after week after week come to meet new people, welcome old friends. We come to sing, we come to laugh, we come to an environment where the positive emotions fill the structure with energy that is healthy and hope-giving. And we come to read from the book that outsells all other books in human history. It's called the Holy Bible. And I'm reading from Psalm. This is written by David, believed to have been written when he was crowned king of Israel. David affirms the greatness and goodness of God to his people. Listen. We shall have joy in your strength, O Lord. And in your salvation, how greatly shall we rejoice. God, you've given us our heart's desire. You have not withheld the request of our lips, for you meet us with the blessings of goodness. You set a crown of pure gold upon our heads. We ask life from you, and you gave it to us. Length of days forever and ever. Our glory is great in your salvation. Honor and majesty you have placed upon us, for you have made us blessed forevermore. You have made us exceedingly glad with your presence, for we trust in the Lord. Be exalted, O God, in your own strength. We will sing and praise your power. My guest this morning realized she was living a life full of old baggage rather than living a new life to its fullest. Dr. Phil was here and he said, she's a person you should have as a guest. And she's helped me. She has a new book, Traveling Hopefully, so... Here we are, Libby Gill. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Why do you suppose Dr. Phil said I should have you as a guest?
Well, Dr. Phil asked me to come help him with his show because he had a message to share and a way of doing television, as you well know, for the good of people. Mm-hmm. And then when he found out what my story was, he offered to write the foreword to my book and to help me share my message.
What's your story?
My story is that I was so caught up in my struggles, and like a lot of people living with so much noise of the outside world, that I was talking to God all the time, talking at God, but I never knew that I could stop and listen, and I could turn down all that noise and hear that voice of God. And I learned that one day when I had gone to visit my father, who was at the end of his life. And I sat at his bedside, and I took his hand, and my father had abandoned my family, and it was a very strained relationship for many years.
How can a psychiatrist do that?
You know, my father, when I was one of six kids and grew up in the South, and there was this point when I was 10 years old, and came down the stairs on Christmas Day, and, you know, with six kids, you got to get there first, because we weren't thinking about Jesus. We were thinking about opening some presents.
Yeah.
And I went into the kitchen, and instead of my parents, there was a neighbor there who told us that my oldest brother, who was home from college on a break, had been in a car accident on Christmas Eve the night before. And he died that Christmas morning. And my family, instead of turning to one another and turning to God, fell apart. And just 4 months after that, my father left my mother, and he actually married a former patient and moved to another country. So there were all of these struggles, and at that point, I learned to believe that my life was pain and loneliness and misery. And once I believed that, I made that my reality. And I got really good at making it better and better and better over the years. Until that moment that I sat by my father and I just stopped. And I heard that voice tell me, this is your chance. This is the time to declare your truth and say what you have to say. And I held his hand, and without blame and without bitterness, I just unburdened everything that I had held back for 40 years. And at that moment, I discovered this enormous power in vulnerability. And since then, there was no going back. I have this call. I never thought I would say that in a million years, but God told me to get out there and tell my story in a practical, step-by-step way so that I could deliver a message of hope and a manual change for other people that are going through the struggles of self-healing. And then once you learn that, you just surrender to God and all that baggage just starts to float away.
Wouldn't you say, if I get your message, that how we deal with our memory system is crucial and critical?
Yes. What I learned from that moment, from the time I was 10 on, was that I had built this system of self-beliefs that weren't really true. And what I tell people now is to challenge those beliefs.
And they were negative self-beliefs.
Right.
Like number one, I'm no good?
I'm no good. I don't deserve. I'm meant to suffer. I'm meant to struggle. I'm meant to be alone.
How do these negative thoughts come to possess us? And you were on your master's degree for psychology and you dropped out of it.
I did.
Well, you learned a lot. That's obvious from the book.
I did learn a lot. And now I had no idea how prophetic that title was, Traveling Hopefully, because that's what I'm all over the country now, talking to people, not just in the corporate world, but in churches and spiritual centers and really sharing this message. And I feel like for the first time, I have discovered my purpose. And at age 50, better now than never at all.
You have a final word for these good people. If they could take one sentence away, what would it be?
That once we can surrender our struggles and stop all the noise and just turn down the volume on the outside world and the noise inside our own heads, that's when, in the stillness, we can find that voice of guidance. Well, one of my favorite scriptures, I think, that sums up all of this is Revelation 3:8. And that is that I have set before you an open door that no one can shut.
Wow, that's fantastic. Look, dear God, I thank you for the person I see through these eyes. Dear God, I thank you that you came to her at a time and you made her receptive and responsive. And thank you that your spirit keeps coming to her in her inner chamber, guiding and leading her. And I thank you that you're using her. Amen.
Thank you.
thou want, Jesus, to walk with me? When I'm troubled, Lord, walk with me. When I'm troubled, Lord, walk with me. Sorrow, Lord, I want Jesus to walk with me.
Thank you, Ernie Alvarez. What a fabulous story. Thank you, Cathedral Choir and Don Newman. Thank all of you.
Geweldig ingetogen gezongen Negro Spiritual. Meestal zijn ze uitbundig en zeer muzikaal, maar dit was heel mooi ingetogen. I walk with Jesus every day. En ja, als we het over muziek hebben, dan hebben we het over Henny Huisman. Henny, ongelooflijk leuk dat je hier vanmorgen wil zijn op deze vroege zondagmorgen.
Dank je, Jan.
Als ik aan jou denk, dan denk ik, dat is de man die zoveel artiesten heeft ontdekt, groot gemaakt. 40, 50 denk ik, van Marco Borsato. Nou, noem ze maar op.
Albert Lotti en ja, er zijn er zoveel, ja. Heel veel, ja.
Ben je trots op?
Apetrots. Ja, als zij nummer 1 stonden, had ik altijd wel het gevoel of ik zelf nummer 1 stond.
Ja,
ja, dat is, ja, dat zijn natuurlijk toch, uiteindelijk zijn ze bij je begonnen, hebben ze je als springplank gebruikt en zijn ze er verder mee gekomen. Ja. Dus ja, daar ben ik trots op.
In de Bijbel staat dat je moet woekeren met je talenten. Heb je dat gedaan in je leven?
Ja, ik heb wel gewoekerd met mijn talenten. Ja.
Ja? Ja, ja. Ben je trots op jezelf?
Dat zou ik niet zo snel zeggen. Dat hoort niet zo bij me. Maar
wie is dan Henny Huisman?
Nou, iemand die wel heel hard geknokt heeft voor zijn succes.
Ja.
En dat wel graag wilde ook. Hè. Dus Ons Lieve Heer heeft me talent meegegeven. Maar ook wel de power om er wat mee te doen.
Ja. Je zegt Ons Lieve Heer.
Ja.
Is die belangrijk voor je?
Ja, vanzelfsprekend. Ja.
Ja, nou, vanzelfsprekend. Heel veel mensen, ook die naar het programma kijken. Dit programma, daar is het niet zo vanzelfsprekend voor.
Nee, maar dat is jammer, hè? Ja. Dan missen ze wel iets, vind ik.
Wat missen ze dan?
Rust. Dat je het gevoel dat je niet alleen bent. Op een of andere manier. Kijk, ik heb een vrouw en ik heb kinderen. Ik heb natuurlijk heel veel lieve, leuke mensen, collega's. Maar er is natuurlijk maar één die echt alles weet, weet je. Dat gevoel een beetje zo. En dat is een heel lekker gevoel. En dan hoef je niet zweverig over te doen of niet interessanterig. Of dat doen ook veel mensen. Die gaan dan, hoor die vogel?
Ja.
Mooi, hè? Maar voor mij is het gewoon, ja. Ja, heel lekker gevoel, een soort zekerheid, een soort. Want de mensen hebben me heel vaak kwalijk genomen van. Hoe kun je nou, God geloven, hè? Ik geloof wel dat er iets is. Maar ja, waarom heet het nou God? Ja, maar ik zeg van iets is natuurlijk veel dunner. Dus, ja, wat is nou iets? Ik zeg, bij ons is het in ieder geval nog een naam, hè? Weet je wel. En het maakt niet uit hoe je het heet en hoe je het gevoel vertaalt. Maar voor mij is het gewoon, ja, een soort, ja... Ja, het klinkt misschien wat oneerbiedig, maar een lekker gevoel. Gewoon een goed gevoel. He, dus dat hij gewoon bij is. En dat hij, je kan gewoon wat aan hem vragen. En je moet natuurlijk niet met de lullige dingetjes aankomen. Je moet met goede dingen aankomen. Je moet geen frutseltjes aan hem vragen. Want daar, is hij, daar heeft hij te druk voor, zeg maar. Ja. Denk ik.
Ja. Ja. Als ik goed begrijp, Hennie, is voor jou geloven gewoon integraal onderdeel van wie je bent, van je leven.
Ja. Kijk, ik mijn opa is koster van de kerk. Ja. Dus ik heb een voorsprong. Ja. Iemand die dus helemaal van niets uit, zal het moeilijker hebben. En je hebt ook mensen die pas gaan geloven op het moment dat ze helemaal de narigheid hebben meegemaakt. Dus toen pas ben ik tot bezinning gekomen. En het is heel gek dat mensen, als ze heel erg ziek zijn geweest en er doorheen komen, dat ze dan denken, nou, dan gaan ze pas, zeg maar, het geloven. En ik ben een bofkont, want ik geloofde er al in, toen ik me goed voelde. En dus je moet God niet nemen als een soort pleister, weet je wel. Dat je denkt van, nou, ik voel me niet zo lekker. Dan...
Ja, maar die pleister die gooi je dan weg, totdat je weer nieuwe nodig hebt. Ja, en zo hoort het niet natuurlijk.
Nee, zo hoort het niet natuurlijk, maar zo gebeurt het wel vaak. Er waren ook heel veel mensen die het programma EO maakten. Zeiden van, nou, je hebt verteld over God en zo. En kom je volgend jaar, heb je dat dan nog? Ik zeg, ja, ik hoop het wel. He, dat mensen denken dat het ook... ik dacht vooral dat het iets tijdelijks is. Weet je wel.
Er was één moment op televisie. Ik keek naar je. Jij was erg ontroerd. Ik ook. Je had tranen in je ogen. En ik kreeg tranen in mijn ogen van, ik denk, heel veel mensen met mij. Heb je het idee waar ik het over heb?
Ja, ik denk dat het bij mezelf was. Bij me thuis was.
Nee.
Niet. Het was niet het moment met Henk Binnendijk.
Nee. Nee, het was in Gethsemane.
Oh ja, natuurlijk. Ja. Sorry. Ja, eigenlijk hebben we hetzelfde soort moment. Het moment wat ik bedoel is het moment dat ik dus iets zei. Dat ik zei, well, laat hij nog maar een keer een boodschap geven. En toen wist ik eigenlijk niet wat ik zei. Ja. En het andere moment was dat ik zo goed voelde dat hij er was. Ja. Ja. Dus het zijn wel twee goddelijke momenten, om het zo maar eens te zeggen.
Ja, maar prachtig. En dan, dan zie je ook hoe je helemaal bent, wie Hennie Huisman is.
Ja, maar het was zo overweldigend gevoel. En in één keer realiseerde ik me dat hij daar gelopen heeft. En toen... Ja, fantastisch moment. En het was zo emotioneel. Het was zo, als ik erover denk, dan krijg ik het weer van... Het was zo overweldigend. En toen zeiden mensen, ben je niet bang dat je het vergeet? Ik zei, kan je dat nou vergeten? Dat vergeet ik nooit. Dat zijn dingen die hebben me zo geraakt. Zo van, het leek wel alsof je zegt van... voor je het niet wist, hier ben ik, weet je wel. Het was zo'n goed gevoel. En ik was ook zo blij. Dus ik zei tegen een paar mensen die liepen, die spraken dus Engels, van... Do you believe in God? Yes. Ja. Oké. Okay. Dat was het eerste wat ik uit kon roepen. Ik dacht, ja, normaal zou je zeggen, ja, die man is niet goed bij je hoofd. Die gaat in één keer roepen of schreeuwen. Maar dat was, ik denk, ja, ze zullen toch niet rondlopen met het idee dat hij niet bestaat. Want dan zal ik eventjes naar ze toe gaan. En dan zal ik het ze nog vertellen, weet je, of zo. Dus dat was een prachtig moment.
Ik wil je een compliment geven. Want wat ik hoor... En wat ik ook zie is dat je heel veel dingen doet, niet om in de schijnwerpers te staan, maar mensen helpen. Bijvoorbeeld nu het programma Huizen Huisman, dat je met kinderen op stap gaat. Ook leuk. Leuk?
Ja, enig om te doen. Er zitten kinderen bij die nooit gevlogen hebben. Die gaan in één keer naar de andere kant van de wereld. Hè? Dus die gaan mij dan vertellen hoe het vliegen is. Ja, het is 9:30 uur. Ja, ik zeg, ik weet het, ik ben hier ook naartoe gekomen. Maar ze denken, ja, hij woont daar, dus ik zal even uitleggen hoe het werkt. En ze mochten in de cockpit kijken. En ze mochten, dus dan is het programma nog geen 30 seconden oud. En dan hebben ze dat is al geweldig. Ja. En dan het verwennen. Maar dan toch de spiegel die we als kijker voorhouden. Maar hoe ze met wat ze mee hebben gemaakt, omgaan. Hè?
Ja.
Dat is natuurlijk... dan mag je met een hoofdpijntje of een griepje niet zeuren. Want er zitten kinderen bij, die hebben gewoon... waren kinderen bij, die hadden al afscheid genomen.
Van het leven.
Ja, en de vader en moeder al van, nou, we gaan dit kind verliezen. En die komen er dan bovenop en die zitten ook met elkaar te praten. Wat had jij voor kanker? Ik had lymfeklierkanker. Oh nee, ik had een tumor. Die was zo groot als mijn vaders hand. Oh ja, en dus...
Wat doet je dat?
Ja, dat is ook heel indrukwekkend. Ook hoe ze erover praten, hoe ze ermee omgaan. En hoe, er is één meisje dat zei... Er kwamen twee engelen op mijn bed zitten... En mijn moeder zag ze niet, ik zag ze wel. En die zei, gaan we slapen? Komt goed. Ik zei, maar was je niet bang dat de Engels zei, kom maar mee of zo? Hè? Dat ze... Ja. Nee, helemaal niet. 11 jaar zit je dan naast als grote lummel. Hè, zo van, die gaat mij vertellen, oh nee, helemaal niet bang. En die werd beter. En dan gaan mensen daarna weer zeggen, ja, maar... Oh, dus we moeten nu in engelen geloven. Ik zei, je moet in niks geloven. Maar gewoon... Luister maar wat dat kind zegt dan, en doe ermee wat je wil. Maar het is wel iets bijzonders natuurlijk. Het kan niet anders zijn dan dat er wat is. Dat is, er staat als een paal boven water. Want de meest kleine, elementaire dingetjes... En mensen zeggen ook, nee, dat is God niet, dat is de natuur. Ik zeg, maar de natuur is ook God. Dat is hetzelfde. Ik bedoel, of denk je dat God, hij doet dat wel en dat niet. Hij doet alles.
En ik vond het hartstikke leuk dat je er was.
Ik vond het
en je openhartigheid en je stralende ogen.
Als ik over hem praat, begin ik te stralen.
Okay.
En ik vond het leuk om aan jou te vertellen. Succes met je programma.
Dank je, Annie. Ik heb nog iets als voor een herinnering. Jou. Misschien ga je er ook bij staan. Het is een gouden band. Het is een Bijbel, goud op snee. En dominee Schuller heeft alle positieve stukken waar je blij van wordt, heeft hij gearseerd. Dus,
wat leuk.
Lees te veel in. Ik heb nog een cadeautje voor je.
Wat leuk, overladen. Het is wel een hele mooie uitvoering. Dit.
Ja, wat dacht je? Ik kom af te controleren of het niet stoffig is geworden.
Ja,
ik heb nog wat voor je. Ik loop even naar buiten. Kijk, want ik wil niet dat je met lege handen naar je vrouw toe gaat.
Oh, ja. Dat zo'n bloem uit de tuin gaan.
Ja, die bloeiertjes. Kijk, er staat de arend op. Dat is de vaas die bij het jubileum hoort.
Erg bedankt.
Oké, okay.
Heel erg bedankt.
Kijk eens.
Oké, okay. Handenvol ga ik weg.
Ja, maar bij de grote baas sta je nooit met lege handen.
Nee, dat is waar.
Wij gaan weer terug naar de Crystal Cathedral, waar we gaan luisteren naar een fantastische Negro spiritual. En misschien gaan we samen meezingen, maar dat zien de kijkers niet.
It all began the day I found that from my window I could only see a piece of sky. I stepped outside and looked around. I never dreamed it was so wide or even half as high. The time had come to try my wings. And even though I knew at any moment I could fall, I felt the most amazing things. The things you can't imagine if you've never flown at all. Though it's safer to stay on the ground, sometimes where danger lies, they're the sweetest of treasures are found. No matter where I go, there'll be memories that tug at my sleeve. But there will also be more to question, yet more to believe. Oh, tell me where is the someone who will turn to look at me and want to share my every sweet imagined possibility. The more I live, the more I learn. The more I learn, the more I realize. The less I know, each step I take, I've a voice now. I turn. why settle for just a piece of sky? I can hear you, I can see you, I can feel you. Oh God, watch me
Thank you, Nita Whitaker. What a wrap-up to that song, the last words. Father, watch me fly. Love that. Well, my guest this morning is somebody could have prayed that prayer and God answered it, because he has been flying around the world. He's a man that I respect 1,000%, Dr. Bruce Wilkinson. Now, he's been here before, and he's led many of us to deeper commitments that have enriched our lives. With his book, The Prayer of Jabez, he broke records with, I think, over 10 million copies sold. It was phenomenal. And then he got a calling to what he's doing now. And he'll tell us about this. He's just back from Africa. But he's always based his ministry on trying to do beyond our known abilities so that we can operate in the realm of faith. And that's exactly the spirit of this place, Bruce. I really feel you're into our wavelength. And so I'm so happy to know you. And he's in much demand speaker. Bruce and his wife Darlene have 3 children, 5 grandsons. And they recently moved to Johannesburg, South Africa to help with famine, poverty, and AIDS crisis. So here he is to tell us about what we can do with the famine, the poverty, and the AIDS crisis. His latest book, The Dream Giver, right?
That's right.
Here you are. Welcome.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
I love this church. I love being here. I love walking on this property. I just felt like I was one step away from heaven when I came on this property this morning. I just finished a brand new book called Beyond the Prayer of Jabez. And I took each part of the prayer and I gave 3 chapters on it, because people everywhere around the world said, please tell us much more about how do you do this? How do you live this way? And I just want to read, not that I need to read, but I just want to read that prayer to you out of the New King James. It says, "And Jabez called on the God of Israel, saying, oh, that you would bless me indeed. Bless me considerably, and that you would do a sovereign act in my life, that you would enlarge my territory, that you would give me more influence, more opportunity. Not that I'll stop trying to do that myself, but I want you, my sovereign almighty God, who does supernatural things, that you out of heaven will make a decision. You'll come down and take the barriers that are around my life, whatever they may be. Maybe it's the place where I'm comfortable. And would you please supernaturally challenge me? And would you take the barbed wire fence that's limited me all my life, and would you enlarge it for me? I, in my heart, want to do more." And Jabez says, "Would you please enlarge it? Would you increase it?" And when I came out here this morning and saw this platform, I said, this is a Jabez platform. Look how big it has become. I mean, this is enlarging the platform. I've never prayed for that before, but I have prayed for Beyond Jabez. When Jabez said, "Would you please enlarge my territory?" he used a specific Hebrew word. He didn't say, "Would you grow it a little bit?" He used the word that means multiply greatly. You remember in the Garden of Eden, God said, "I want you to multiply and fill the earth." That's the exact same word that Jabez said. He didn't want God to take his territory and enlarge it, you know, from here to here. He said, "Lord, You know what I can do. You know what we and I can do together. You and I can do together. Would you please do something for me? Would you let me do more for you? And would you please let me do a lot? Because my lifetime is this short. And that's what God did. And that's what I'm going to ask about you. I'm going to ask you to do that. To actually ask God while I'm speaking to you, Lord, please, please. That's what I say. Please. Let me do more for you. If this has been your life to this point, praying that way can be a scary thought, can it? Because if this is where you've ever been, this is where you're comfortable, this is where you're safe, this is what you know, what's going to happen? And when you say to God, Lord, I want a vision for more, this is unknown. You know, you've never been there before. You're not quite sure what's going to happen. And many people run back in the middle of their comfort zone and never venture out to where God dwells. Because God dwells in his power in places where you know you can't do it without his help. And that's called M-O-R-E. It's called more. In the middle of writing this book, Beyond Jabez, and it'll be over here somewhere, at break time, I was on an airplane flying from Atlanta to LA here. And I was editing it for the last time. And I was seated at a window seat. And the man who sat next to me, when he came in, we all kind of noticed him. He had many rings in his many places and tattoos, and his hair was of a different variety. And I thought to myself, now that it, and he didn't walk very straight. He was kind of wandering a little bit. And I thought, I wonder what happened to him. And he kept walking, and then he stopped. And then he sat down next to me. And I said, this is going to be an interesting ride. Well, we talked a little bit, but because I had to edit this by the time we got to LA, I kind of really went to work. And I finished the third chapter on Expand My Territory. And I was about ready to go to the third part, which is put your hand upon me, and then the fourth, keep me from evil. And I had a funny thought. I was looking out the window and said, God, is this really true? I mean, I've been living it for 30 years, but for some reason, at that moment, before it went into print, because I really shared a lot of stories of what happens when you live this way. You just don't pray it once or twice, but you live this way. And I looked out this window and said, Lord, don't be irritated with me, but would you do it one more time? Would you expand my territory to include him? I did. And I said to God, please do it supernaturally. I could turn around and talk to him. That's not hard to do. Would you please do it supernaturally? I looked out the window and I started laughing a little bit just because I realized what I just said to God. And I thought, I wonder what he's going to do. And I just stood there. I sat there for a little bit. This sounds impossible, but this is what happened. A guy next to me said, are you a priest? Am I a priest? Yeah, are you a priest? Why do you say that? Well, I've been looking over your shoulder and reading that book. That's a good book. I said, but are you a priest? And I said, well, I guess you could say that. Thank God. Thank God? He said, well, you've seen me drinking this whole flight. And the stewardess told him, I can't give you any more. He said, yesterday, my best friend in my whole world died. And he said, I don't know where he is. And I don't know if that had been me where I'd go. And I said to God, God, send me a priest. Wow. That's what you call supernatural. God, do you have to convince God when you say to him, please let me do more? Or is he the one in the throne of glory saying, who will go for us? That's the way it really is. Because most people won't. They give one reason or another. I'm afraid, or I've never been there, or how can this happen? And God's saying, wait a minute. If you go for me, I'll take care of you. If you seek my kingdom first, all these other things will be added to you because I'll add them to you for you. Just go for me. That's why Jabez's prayer always works, because so few people say more. Most people say less. And when a person comes along and says, God, you know what I can do. You know what I can't do. I want to do everything I possibly can for you because of what you've done for me. Please send me. God says, yes, of course. That's why Jesus in the Great Commission said, I want you to go into all the world. Now it's the world I want to ask you to go to. We weren't planning on moving to Africa. Didn't want to move to Africa. Never thought about it in my life. My wife and I went down to Africa. She stayed a week and I stayed 3 weeks. In those 3 weeks, without any warning whatsoever, no hint, no email, no fax, no whispering, nobody coming up and saying, you know, I sense you're going to be moving to Africa, out of the blue. God takes a hold of my chest, opens it up, takes out my heart, digs a hole in Africa, puts my heart, without even asking permission, as if he needs to, puts it in and says, now, son, follow your heart to Africa. And my first reaction, what? You got to be kidding, Lord. And I kind of heard this whisper, aren't you the guy that's been praying all these years? Please expand my territory. Are we going to argue where the territory is? I couldn't know what to do. I called my wife and I said to her, we're very happily married. And I said to her, sweetheart, I think you better sit down. She said, in all my marriage, you've never said to sit down. I said, I think you better lay down. She said, long pause. She said, oh, no. I could hear her heart beating. We're not moving to Africa, are we? And scrambling for what to say, I said, sweetheart, do you remember those vows you made to me all those years ago? And then I said, we're not going to go unless God confirms it with you too. But then we moved. And because we moved, that happened in May, and we had moved in August. When God says go, I think he means go. When we got there and moved and bought a house in Johannesburg, South Africa, on the first day to work, I come to a light and there's people begging for food at the light. It's one thing when you're a tourist. It's another thing. It's 3 blocks from your house. And it bothered me. And I rolled down my window and gave him some money. He went over the hill, came to another light, more people begging for food, and it was cold. And I rolled down my window and I gave him all the money that I had. I had no more money. And I just looked straight ahead, as if these people didn't exist. And I felt ashamed. I felt guilty. I felt terrible. And I said to God, what can we do? We're just one little family. We didn't move out with a big organization. We left all that behind. We just moved as a family. And it bothered me a great deal. And every morning I would process this. I'd want to go a different way. I'd want to hide it. And I said, Lord, I will not hide from the need of Africa. I am going to go to the need because that's why you sent us here. I don't know what to do, but you'll tell us what to do because that's what I want, is to do what you want. A couple weeks later, our son, who was in Africa on a different reason, said to me, would you come and speak at a squatter camp in a little church for 30 people? And I said, I'd love to do that with you, Dave. So we went. And after this service, I was outside and I was talking to about a 30-year-old young man who was very discouraged, and he was looking down, and I went to comfort him and encourage him. And eventually I put my arm around his side. And when I did, I felt every one of his ribs. And I gasped out loud. I did. I said, oh, when's the last time you ate? He said, oh, we ate this morning. We ate the bread you gave us. What did you eat yesterday? The bread you gave us yesterday. I said, I've only been given bread here 3 days. What did you eat 4 days ago? Nothing. 5 days ago? Nothing. When's the last time you ate? I don't know. And I said, that's not right. Got in the car, the van, and began to drive back. And I said to Dave, what does God want done here? He said, Dad, God doesn't want anybody going to bed hungry day after day after day. And I said, Dave, I have a book that has God's answer to hunger. It has God's answer to the hunger problem in Africa. He said, you have a book that has the answer for this? And I said, yes. He said, whoa, what is it? He's a seminary trained guy. I said, it's the B-I-B-L-E. Oh, Dad, come on. It doesn't have the answer to the hunger of Africa. I said, yes, it does. He says, well, then what is it? I said, I don't know. I've never had to look for it before. But it has the answer. God doesn't leave us answerless. So I said, what we're going to do is start in Genesis 1:1, and we're going to read to the right. We're going to keep on reading until God tells us what to do. But that's what we did. It took us two pages. In the Garden of Eden, God says to Adam and Eve and says, I'll take care of the food problem. I've given you these grains to eat. You don't grow them. I grow them. I've given you these fruit trees for you to eat. You have nothing to do with them. I have everything to do with them. And each one bears its own seed. You never have to buy seed. These plants make their own seed. And I thought to myself, oh, listen to this. The people of Africa think if they have a job, they wouldn't go hungry. Or if they had money, they wouldn't go hungry. And God said, wait a minute. I don't want anybody going hungry if you can't find the job, because there is places where there are no jobs. I want all of you to have all the food you want. I'm making it grow. I'll even make it rain. I said, son, that's God's answer. So we went back to this little place and began to plant gardens next to people who have nothing. And we tried it, and we tried it in 2003. And 950 families at the end of that year, it worked. And I said, Dave, God's answer always works. What's in a garden? We talked to UNAIDS, the CDC, the World Health Organization, and the major agricultural group in Africa. What do the people in the villages need? And they said they needed immune-boosting vegetables because all they eat is ground corn, and their immune system is so weak that when they catch AIDS too simply, and if they catch AIDS, their immune system is so weak that when we give them the medicine, they get sicker. So they said plant spinach and cabbage the first time, and then grow it into six different kinds of vegetables. And that's what we do. Each season, we increase the kind of vegetables that we grow. And I spoke to a little church in Johannesburg, and I said to them, how about you come for a week? And 90 of them came. We came to Swaziland with 122 people. We'd already met with the chiefs in the villages. The people couldn't believe Americans and South Africans had come to help. They keep wanting, what do you really want? Why are you really here? And then they finally came to believe it's because God sent us and because we cared. And I said to those 122 people, I didn't know how to plant 10,000 gardens in a week, but God did. Let's go do it and share our faith and love on the people as we go. And the first day we planted 300 gardens, and we were very tired. And the people came back to me and said, what was the number again? Was it 1,000 you meant? Said, no, it's 10,000. Well, how are we going to do that? I don't know. We changed the strategy the next day. We planted 600 gardens. We changed the strategy the next day, and we planted 1,200 gardens, and we had 2 days left. I said to them Thursday morning, come back early. Because unless God tells us what to do on Friday, we'll never do it. They planted 1,100 that day. I didn't go plant gardens that day. I stayed in my hotel room. I didn't sit on the bed. I got on my knees. I didn't eat that day. As I got on my knees, you know all about this. You get on your knees and you get a hold of God's robe and you don't let him go. And you remind him he is the father of the fatherless. And he said, I don't want people hungry, and I want you to extend your soul to those who are hungry until they are satisfied. Next day, Friday morning, 1 day left, we gave them the new strategy God gave and they went out. And at the end, I stood at the place where they're walking, driving in with a little piece of paper. And I said to everybody in every car, how many did you plant? How many did you plant? And that night, Friday night, we had the U.S. ambassador speaking, the South African ambassador speaking, member of parliament speaking, and the Queen spoke. Everybody had heard of this in the whole country, front pages of the paper. And I said to them, you know, there's no way that this could happen. We didn't plant 10,000 gardens in a week. We planted 12,874 gardens. Now, the member of parliament came up to me after that and he said, he was in tears, and he says this to me, Lutfog de Blamini, he said to me, oh, we had lost hope in Swaziland. Maybe God really does care about our country. And the people of Swaziland need your help. Listen to your heart.
May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you. And may God give you peace in your lying down and in your rising up, in your labor and in your leisure, in your laughter and in your tears, until you come to stand before Jesus in that day in which there is no sunset and no dawning. Amen.
Michelle, on the wall.
Wat een inspirerende en bemoedigende boodschap van Bruce Wilkerson. De man die samen met zijn bekende broer David Wilkerson in Hartje, New York, werkt onder de mensen die verschoppelingen zijn. Bekend is het boek Het Kruis in de Asfaltjungle. En daar werken ze in die asfaltjungle. Ik vond het ook fijn dat we Henny Huisman te gast hadden. Een groot muzikaal talent. En dan denk ik, over talenten gesproken, dat hoe groot of hoe klein ons talent ook is, God van ons houdt. Hij kijkt naar wie we zijn. En met deze boodschap neem ik afscheid namens Hour of Power Nederland. We willen iedereen heel hartelijk bedanken voor de vele brieven die we krijgen, voor de blijken van medeleven, instemming, voor de mensen die ons financieel ondersteunen. Daardoor zijn deze uitzendingen mogelijk. Heel hartelijk dank. Graag tot volgende week bij Hour of Power. En wilt u meer informatie, kijk op onze website www.hourofpower.nl. Settle for